9. Oh, okay. Well, he'll leave a message. If the fetus is removed by a cesarean section before it has undergone a full gestational period, and thus it cannot live for more than a brief period, it is not considered to be born offspring. It is therefore forbidden to be eaten and is like a limb that was severed from a living animal. However, one who eats... Is that same number? Oh. Is exempt from liability for punishment. Ooh. But if one cut off the limb from the fetus and removed it from the mother, it is subject to the prohibition of eating the limb of a living creature. Even if one severed the head of the fetus while it was still in the womb and then removed it, the same prohibition would apply. It bears noting that there is no difference in this rule whether the fetus was alive or dead at the time of the limb or the head was severed. For while the fetus is still in the womb, it is reckoned as a piece of the mother's flesh, and it is therefore as if one cut off a piece of the mother's flesh. Whoa, what's that? I thought I had AD. Dang, a doodle. Really put that on, dude. That was cool. Is that a screensaver? Oh, yeah, put that one on. Okay, me. And that's like... Ooh, look at the sparklies. You'll get car sick, but I'll just sit there, fire up my computer, and watch the screensaver for an hour. Double it, go in there and watch the screensaver while I finish cooking. Okay, 11. What's that? I want to go play with that thing. Yeah, that's that's probably kind of true, at least for the first couple of weeks. I'll be going, ooh, pretty. Yeah, I got a daughter who, she's over sparkly, and you just... breaks her concentration every time. She's like that crow on Mrs. Frisbee in the Wrath of Nim. Ooh, sparkly. Yeah, that's my second oldest is like that. 11, I'm on page 335. Ooh, we've been there. If the hand or foot of a fetus emerged from its mother while the mother is still alive, even if the limb remained outside the mother until the mother was slaughtered, or died, it is subject to the rules of eating the limb of a living creature and is permitted, for it did not separate from the body of the fetus. If, however, the limb that emerged was cut off while the mother was still alive, regardless of whether the fetus is alive or already dead, or whether the mother was slaughtered or died while the fetus was alive, the severed limb is reckoned as a limb of a living creature and is forbidden to be eaten. If the limb that emerged from the womb was severed only after the mother of the fetus died, it is considered to be a carcass and it may be eaten. I sound like your son? What, the sparkly thing? Yeah, I got a daughter who does that. Ooh, a sparkly. And I mean, you hold up something that sparkles and whatever she's doing, she's done. She'll go do something else. Yeah, she's a bit out there. She works for the airlines. Makes me want to fly. She's a good kid, though. Okay. 13. If one limb exited and was severed, and another limb exited and was likewise severed, then the status of this meat depends on the following. Very interesting. A, B. A. If the severed pieces constitute no more than a minority of the fetus, they are forbidden, for they are considered as being from the living creature, from the mother animal. If, however, the majority of the fetus exited and was cut off, it's considered as if it was born. Therefore, a piece of the fetus that remained in the womb or was discharged or later removed from the womb is considered to be a piece of a carcass and is thus permitted. Wow. This isn't so complicated, but it is some very exact stuff. So if the death of a creature cannot be ascertained, then you're better off not committing the act of eating it. That's one way to be safe. However, Marvin, according to this, let's suppose an animal is in the process of being born and it gets whacked in half. Okay? There is a status of that meat. If it is being delivered cesarean section, there's a status. If it is being delivered through the birth canal, there is a hole. And that's why it's important. I mean, this is not necessarily just a little bit of light reading. This needs to be read, and it needs to be studied because it's your responsibility. You have to know this. And so, Bob, and those of you out there who want to do a lot more and other stuff, if you know this stuff inside out, upside down, and sideways, then, yeah, I want more, I want more, I want more. And we'll talk about possibilities, status, etc. But there are people that I have talked to and people that I have studied with and people who have visited my house who know a ton more about this than I do. And I was really awe-inspired by the depth of knowledge that a lot of people have in this field. They've studied it for 20 years. I've heard about it a long time ago. I did some reading on it. I don't by far call myself an expert. But what I do is I can teach this and I can relate it to stories and stuff that is found in Jewish thought. I think the real question is, how do we know that the meat we are currently eating from the grocery store is compliant from these laws? It is very, very, very okay to assume that it's okay. Okay? Rebecca, it is okay to eat. Don't have a problem with that. Because as long as it's USDA, however they kill it, however they slaughter it, prepare it, all that, and get it to you, you can eat that. But Rebecca, let's suppose you still have a concern in the back of your mind. Do you? Rebecca? Do you still have a question in the back of your mind? Okay. If you do, yes, that's true. But if somebody like Rebecca, the baby was talking. Oh, that takes precedence over me every time. When the baby talks, people listen. Do you still have a question in the back of your mind, even though I said it was okay? Because I do have a solution for that. Ah, we haven't got to the eggs part. You still got a question? Yeah. What you do, Rebecca, you go to Trader Joe's and you go into their meat section, and the Trader Joe's where I live carries Empire. Used to carry Aaron's Best, but that's another story. They carry turkey breasts, they carry whole chickens, cut-up chickens, and ground turkey. That's a ton of meat if you want it there. Or if you are in a larger city, go to a kosher butcher. It's going to be more money, but you have nothing to worry about. Wow. Yeah, we just went down to L.A. this last weekend, Rebecca. That's the closest place we can go to get cheese. We spent about $200 on cheese. We drove down there, got cheese, got some kosher pizza, went to the bookstore across the street, and came home. Yep. If you have, Rebecca, where you live, if you have a Trader Joe's, they'll carry that stuff for you. So you just ask your local Trader Joe's or whatever they have in your area that's similar to it. Well, yeah, the wife wants pizza. It's 110 miles one way. Oh. Okay. Yeah, if my wife loves string cheese and it's 110 miles. Oh, that's cool. No, we go down to this place in Pico Robertson and we get our kosher pizza down there. And we go Pico Galat, the pizza place, the mitzvah store, and home. Once in a while, we hit some other places. But in general, that's about a 250-mile day for cheese. You can't get any kosher cheese locally that is worth your time. I mean, it's like a buck a slice. Yeah, it's like a buck a slice if you get it locally. Oh, yeah. My wife can make it. She has one of those KitchenAids. She can make her own, but yeah, we go down to L.A. My son's down there, so we kill two birds with one stone. Okay, let me see. I do need to get done with this chapter. Wow, can you believe this? We are, oh man. We got 30 pages to go. Can you believe that? I want to try and get the, man. I was frozen again for a second. Sorry. Let me go out and come back in. In there, hopefully. Can see it on my wife's one over there. Hey, I'm better looking on that one. I got to change computers. Okay, yeah, when I was toying with kosher, yeah. That's a good question, Francis. I may either start this book over again, or I may go into another area like a history book or something like that. Or a wink, wink, I can do a Kabbalah class or something. Wink, wink. I doubt that. That's probably what I'll do. Well, yeah, understand that if you go out, and this is one thing for Rebecca, if you go out and buy kosher meat, and you buy a nice piece of kosher meat, and you cook it on unkoshered utensils, the meat's not kosher. So if you go out and buy yourself a very expensive roast, bring it home to put it in your Dutch oven that has had other meat in it or has not been properly teufeled, the meat's not kosher. So it's kind of a waste of money. But the meat tastes better, there's no question, the meat tastes better. And you know pretty much where it's been and how it's been there. It is more expensive to live as a Jew than it is a Gentile. No question. Yeah, we have three sets of dishes in our house. No, four sets of dishes. We have four sets of dishes in our house. Half of them are in storage. Two of them are in storage. Take it out one week a year. Exactly, Rebecca. Very, very true. Very good. But you must admit the meat tastes better. Very good, Les. That same commercial is Hebrew National, and Hebrew National, I think, is the Heckscher has been bought by somebody else, and he's trying to raise the level of kashrut for Hebrew National. As of right now, Hebrew National is not an accepted, the Heckscher on that's not accepted for people who keep very, very kosher. It's good stuff, but it doesn't meet the standards. Yeah. I think it's Shofar brand is another one. That is, I think it's OU or Glot. The Star-K on the Hebrew National, as of today, as far as I know, is not up to snuff to be put in my kitchen. Is it possible for a Gentile kitchen to be kosher? Ooh, that's an excellent question. The answer to that is I could come, Bob, and I could kosher your kitchen completely. I could tell you what you need to do. I'd walk in with my blowtorch or my scrubby stuff, and I could kasha your kitchen. But the problem is your level of kashrut would not be accepted by somebody who keeps strictly kosher to come eat in your house. As an example, let's suppose we have a foreign exchange student from East Oshkosh and comes to stay with us. Why I do this, I don't know, but here's an example. Somebody comes as a foreign exchange student and the person's not Jewish, or the person comes from a family where they've never kept kosher, know nothing about it. My kitchen is in serious danger. In fact, there's people out there would consider the kitchen no longer kosher. I keep very, 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 very close tabs when we have people who don't keep the level of kashrut that my wife and I do. When they come to visit us for dinner, we will set the table, we will clear the table. Because if you've ever had the experience, Chas v'Shalom, of somebody coming to your house and making themselves a cup of coffee and using the wrong spoon and watch all the hair in the back of your neck stand up, it's not a pleasant situation. So the rule is, you're more than welcome to come to our house for dinner. Stay out of my kitchen. If you want it, ask. I'll wait on you hand and foot. Not a problem. Yeah, I've heard that, Francis. Yeah. Yeah, I know people who won't do that. I'm not going to go there. I'm just not going to go there. It's called Lashon Hora. I'm not going to go there. Okay. 14 on page 336. Yeah, it is. It's not easy keeping kosher. It's not easy. Once you do it for a while, oh, there I go again. Wow, that was weird. I'm on high speed. I don't know. Once you've done it for a while, I mean, right now, my wife and I got a kitchen that's kosher. Yeah, my wife, when we got married, came in and our kitchen's not a problem for us. But if anybody else from the outside comes in, I mean, talk about, I will be, and I have been, the person on the other side of the counter with the apron on to cook and give you food. I don't know, I'm kind of a stickler about that because I've koshered that place a couple of times. And that's not counting just for Pesach. All right, I need to get this chapter done, and I want to go into this week's Torah portion. Is Larry still in here? Chesed's in here. Wow. Has he been? Okay, I need to get this part done. 14, 15, and 16. Yeah, well... though it has been explained earlier in chapter 1, it is forbidden to cut off limbs from an animal even if one does not intend to eat them. It is nevertheless permitted to cut off limbs from a fetus to save its mother. I understand that. That makes sense. If a beast of prey ripped off and swallowed a limb of a living mammal or bird and afterwards the injured animal escaped, but the beast of prey was killed and the animal was removed from its digestive system, the limb is still considered as a limb from a living animal is forbidden on the assumption that the animal's whose limb was swallowed is still alive. Needless to say, this law applies if the limb was coughed out by the beast of prey. Wow, that is fascinating. This is why I like studying halacha. I wouldn't have thought of that. I'm sure I would have eventually come around with that question. But that is just fascinating. You know something, Rebecca? There are some things out there that people call delicacies that I don't understand, but I'll tell you right now, they're called delicacies. I don't need to go into any of those details, but there's some, hey, Okie's here. But there's some stuff that they call delicacies that, Yeah, good. I don't see Chesed in here often. He's busy working tonight. Oh, I got an itchy ear. Okay. A lot of people feeling green. But you must admit, this stuff is very interesting. Why do we assume it's alive? Because if you take an animal, you sever the limb immediately, then take the bird of prey. As an example, there has been people who get limbs severed. There's, and I don't remember what it was in today. I think MSNBC had something on this little girl whose hand was severed. They sewed it back on, and it's doing okay. So if you take a bird of prey or an animal of prey and you sever a limb of a living creature, take it out, and it coughs it up, and it swallows it and coughs it up, you can't eat it. Why? Because it's assumed it's still alive. That's fascinating. There's stuff that I've read in the Gemara that, I mean, there's some stuff that I have to go over again this week. There's a whole section on Job and Bava Basra, and I just love this part. It starts on Tet Vav, and it is fascinating. The origins, who he is, who he wasn't, what we know, what we don't know. It's just amazing. I love that stuff. It's in-flight meal. Good one. That's very good. Okay, let's keep going. Page 337. The following rules applies if one struck a bird and caused an egg it was carrying to fall out. If the egg is fully developed with both a white and yolk, although the shell is not formed and the egg is still in the soft membrane, it is permitted, for then it is already considered as independent from the mother. If, however, oh, what happened to my other one over there? They don't know what just happened over there. Something happened to the computer. Maybe it rebooted itself. I don't know. Okay. If, however, the egg still requires a mother for development, it's considered as a part of the bird organs. It's considered the lip. I don't know. I've been booted all night. Okay, I've been in and out, going in hyperspeed, no speed, all that stuff. I don't know what's going on. Get hold of Ephraim and ask him what's cooking. I don't know. If a bird lays naturally, even if it's not fully developed, and one slaughters or kills a bird and discovered underdeveloped eggs inside that are still dependent on the mother, the eggs are permitted. How cool is that? A chick that is being formed in its egg until it cracks the shell is not considered a bird and has the status of a Sheretz-type creature. That means... Oh, that's very cool. Very nice. Thus, it appears that if one cooked it out of the egg and cut off a limb from it, the meat has no prohibition. So if you have something where you have an egg and the bird has developed and it hasn't started pecking its way out and you eat it, or you pull a limb off it and eat it, it's not a problem, according to this right here. This applies to worms that grow in an animal. Oh, man. Glad I'm not having dinner in a few minutes. On the other hand, worms that enter an animal's body from the outside through its nose, mouth, skin, and the like are permitted and may be cooked with the animal's meat. If there is a doubt regarding whether they grew in the animal or entered from the outside, they are permitted. Wow. Okay. That was interesting. Oh, man. Okay. Well, I never promised you a rose garden, as it were. Okay, this week's tour portion. I want to get into that. What happened to my wife? Yeah, I never eat again. That'll never happen. Okay, Kisavo, this week's tour portion, if I'm not mistaken, is Nitzavim, right? Is that correct? This week's Torah portion. Hello, anybody out there? Very good. Lahitra, bud. Okay, this week's Torah portion. Let's talk about this week's... Yes. Let's talk about this week's Torah portion. Now, what I'm going to do... Those of you who have the Stone Edition, if you're trying to follow me, you can't because I'm not going according to what you're reading. But as I said before, there are seven parshas... parts within a Torah portion. And it's amazing. There's 7 days in a week. If you read one of those, and we explain how to do that, a day starting on Saturday and going all the way to Friday, you finish the Torah portion. Just read a section a day. Okay, Moses makes a new covenant with the nation entering the land. Ooh, I'm sorry. On the last day of Moses' life, Moses continued to speak to the assembly of Jews. He began with comforting assurances. This is beautiful. Put everything in perspective. We have gone through 40 years of wandering. We are on the verge as a nation of going into the land and to begin conquering the land. The person who has been our guide, the person who has brought us out of Egypt, put up with us for 40 years, is about to die. This is his last day of life. He knows it. We know it. Can you imagine being this group of people who has gone through 40 years of wandering in the wilderness with a teacher of the magnitude of Moses who has provided us with everything that we have to the point our clothes didn't even wear out for that time? All of a sudden, we're going to be leaving the womb, if you will, and entering into an unknown land that has been promised to us, and this greatest teacher we ever had is about to die. I cannot think of a more melancholy day. It is beautiful. He was 120 to the day. It's beautiful as to what he did, and he's going to be gathered like his brother and his sister. The divine kiss takes his life. His student, Joshua ben Nun, is about to take over. Hello. All of a sudden, he went kind of quiet over there. Where'd I go? I didn't do it. And all of a sudden, he's about to die. So it's very, very, very... He kicked you out too? Wow, that's weird. Everybody got kicked out tonight. Okay. I know that you're frightened after hearing 98 curses from me. Let me assure you that despite all the afflictions you will survive, these curses will ultimately benefit you. Declared God, I shall spend my arrows on them, the Jews. This threat is at the same time a comfort, for it implies all my arrows will be spent, but Bnei Yisrael will still be here. I hope you caught that. It says in here, this is beautiful, I shall spend my arrows on them. So what this is saying, that God is going to punish us when we need to be punished, but it's also the idea of God spending all his arrows, which eventually we're going to get out from under it and do the right thing, God willing, in my lifetime. That would be nice. This is an interesting little analogy here. An archer aimed his bow at the ceiling. He continued shooting until his quiver of arrows was empty, but the ceiling withstood the assault. Similarly, the Jewish people suffered and individuals die, but the nation survives. So all the stuff that we've been through, all the bad stuff we've been through, all the Holocausts, and that's plural, the last over 2,000 years of our history, when it comes to an end, when this Gullus comes to an end and the Mashiach arrives, it's going to be very different for us. And what is really beautiful about all of this is I'm sitting in a room with people that if the Mashiach arrives tomorrow, come live with us. How cool is that? I mean, this is very important to understand. So I hope that was kind of clear. Oh, it is very cool, Les. It is. And I've said that over the years, and what the people... I need another drink. Yes, dear. So my wife says when my voice starts getting scratchy. One thing that's very important to understand is when the Mashiach finally arrives, we go, okay? We go. We're there. We get called home. We go home. We do what we're supposed to do. But the we, happy to say, also includes righteous Gentiles. You guys go and we go, while the rest of the world has to deal with what they got to deal with. So when I say with Mashiach arrives, we go, you guys get to join us. That's the very cool part. Moses told the people, this day resembles the day of the giving of the Torah. Oopsie. God is entering with you into a new covenant to which he binds you with an oath. Wow. You are all entering into this covenant, your leaders, Yeshua, Eliezer, which are all the leaders of the tribes and the elders of the Sanhedrin, the judges over the thousands, over the hundreds, over the fifties, over the tens, all your men, your wives, who may not fully understand my words but will be rewarded for listening and accepting them, your children who will thus be trained in Torah mitzvahs. The covenant includes those Gerim converts. Among you who are your choppers of wood, drawers of water, Moses was referring to the group from Canaan who asked to be accepted as converts. Whoa. Moses appointed them communal wood choppers and water drawers. He also foresaw that the Gibeonites would deceitfully convert in Joshua's time in order to save their lives, and so included them in the covenant. Okay, no. All this is are the Canaanites that said, hey, we want to be like you because we're about to conquer the land. These are Canaanites, and there's a whole section about Canaanites, slaves, etc. Yes. Okay, okay. This is not a ger toshav. A Canaanite can't be a ger toshav. Just a ger. Okay? Moses warned the people, many of you who lived in Egypt still remember their images of wood and stone. Who's he talking about? Oh, man. There, I'm back again.